Yeah, this podcast is all that you get. Josh and Antonio might be it, but heaven knows they'll try.
A Ted Lasso podcast on Post Show Recaps. You better believe it. Welcome to our Ted Lasso talk. I'm Josh Wigler. I'm joined here by the man who's going to give every listener of this podcast a PlayStation 5, Antonio Mazzaro. Antonio, how are you?
You backed me into something I cannot deliver on. Somebody wants to give me one, though. DMs are open, just saying.
Yeah, slide into those DMs with, well, no, that's dangerous. That is, like, the kind of territory where, like, you're getting doxxed and not in, like, the Dr. Sharon way.
Yes.
Someone sends you a link, fill out this form, I'll get you a free PS5. That is, as the kids say, sus.
Yes, that is sus. And then I meet Elliot Alderson. Some big Fountainhead fan is going to get me, Josh.
Oh, my God. You brought it up. I didn't. We are talking Season 2, Episode 3, Do the Rightest Thing here on Ted Lasso, an episode that I think, Antonio, just like some of the surface stuff that I'm reading, a lot of the comments that we got from listeners of the podcast, patrons of Post Show Recaps, are talking about this as one of the very best episodes of Ted Lasso, certainly the best of the season so far. I'm really excited to dig into it. It's obviously a really meaty episode of the show.
I completely agree. And it's funny to think about because certainly, Ted Lasso has the capability, just as all sport does, to provide a lens that we can use to view society through. The lens is not just something that is opaque or that we look through, right? But it's something that reflects, and it reflects in a way that perhaps is unique among other mediums. Different things reflect differently, and sport certainly reflects society in very specific ways. And I don't think you can really do a football show based on what's going on in football these days and not get into issues like this, of player empowerment, of player activism, and of franchises struggling to figure out their place in this, as they certainly are money partners with a lot of very negative companies, and having their players speak out against them puts them in a very unique position. So it was a great episode, very well executed. I'm fascinated by the IMDb scores for TV episodes because it's sort of this marketplace of ideas thing where you're just users of a website have upvoted them, and it's the most popular broad website. It's the highest scored episode in season two with a 9.0 out of 10 of all the votes. And it really only trails a couple of episodes from season one, Tan Lines. I know an episode you love, Josh, is a 9.0. Make Rebecca Great Again and The Hope That Kills You are both 9.2s. So even by IMDb scores, this is one of the highest rated episodes of Ted Lasso ever, and a really, really well executed episode for sure.
Yeah, I think an instructive thing to know, I know that this was something that Coach Beard himself, Brendan Hunt, had tweeted about in his own Ted Lasso Twitter talk, that this episode and the two previous, that episodes 1 through 3, much like in the first season, those first three episodes dropped all in a single day. Like the premiere was effectively like a 3-episode event. The Ted Lasso writers' room wrote the first 3 episodes, broke the season, assuming that those first 3 episodes would be released in a single batch as well, so that watching all 3 of them back to back to back was the ideal way of consuming this. So it's 3 weeks into the show, Antonio, and in a sense, we are now just like finishing the premiere in a matter of speaking. And I know that you, no surprise in my mind that you've done it that way. After episode 3 dropped, you watched those first 3 again to see how this kind of works as like a 3-headed beast. How did that play? Did it illuminate anything for you?
Definitely did. If it's, for example, Higgins brings up in this episode, just sort of in a passing way, oh yeah, we're having financial problems, which is something we talked about on the podcast last episode. And not being part of the first 2 episodes, you might think, well, it's probably not going to be a big story this year. They didn't get right to it right away. But if you think about the first three episodes as a group, it's one of the very last things that we are left with, is this potential financial peril for AFC Richmond in the championship, which, as I said last podcast episode, very appropriate storyline for them to be doing. It wouldn't have seemed like a big deal, but when you think about this being sort of the end of the premiere, it seems like one of the last things they hit on is this particular element. So there are a few more things which I want to talk about later on into the podcast here, that once you look at all three episodes, it's interesting to track. For example, what are Roy Kent's scenes saying about Roy Kent in the first three episodes, if we take it all as one piece? What about Rebecca? And what storylines has she had prominent over the three episodes, and how are they linked? There are things like that we can do with probably most of the characters. Some, I think, more interesting or illuminating with specific scenes that are there, and maybe some in ways her scenes that, and things that aren't there. Also, full disclosure, we wrote the first three podcast episodes to be done at once as well, right?
That's correct, yeah. Okay. So we didn't expect that we would have to break them up over the course of almost a month.
Yeah, we've been sitting here at this table for like 6 hours at this point.
Yeah, just toiling away has certainly been the way we've been doing this. No, there's so much to get into. I want to make sure that we hop into all of it. A couple of business items right off the top, really quickly before we dig in deeper. One, of course, we are always open to feedback. We love your feedback. We've gotten some great emails, some great comments in the Post-Show Recaps Patreon Discord about the show. Certainly the Discord is self-explanatory if you are a member. If you are not, it's basically a sprawling chat room server where you can talk to the Post-Show Recaps host as well as fellow listeners of the podcast. You can sign up for that at patreon.com/postshowrecaps. Beyond that, we've got our email address, TedLasso@postshowrecaps.com. That's going to go directly to myself and Antonio. So we want that feedback in for episode 4, which this podcast is normally dropping on Mondays. That's been the way of it so far. For episode 4 coming up, we're going to be a little late. I just want to give you guys that note before you get to your Monday. You're like, where is it? It's not coming on that Monday. We are recording on that Monday. We will be recording on August. What is that going to be? I think August 16th.
Sounds right.
Afternoon of August 16th. So you've got some time to send in your feedback. If you've got feedback for the season, if you've got feedback for that episode specifically, this will be a great time to send that in. So TedLasso@postshowrecaps.com. Just wanted to give you that note early in case you reach your Monday, August 16th. You're like, where is my Ted Lasso podcast on Post-Show Recaps? It's coming. It's just going to be a day or so delayed. So we appreciate your patience. We also appreciate your patience as we've taken all of this time to really start talking about the episode, but we shall waste no further time. And I think, Antonio, much like Nora being starstruck by Sam Obasanya, I think that is the character that we have to start with. A huge episode for Sam, a really huge, just major storyline for Sam, and I think for Ted Lasso season 2 writ large, dealing into some really interesting territory, some complicated territory, with the whole storyline about Dubai Air and Cerithium Oil, and Sam taking the stand and his fellow teammates taking the stand alongside him. Really incredibly moving. I would love to just start off with your take on this story that I think dominated so much of the episode, and certainly is, like, I think rightly the story that a lot of people are talking about coming out of week 3.
I was so thrilled that we got a Sam story the way we got it. We've been talking about this even back to our analysis of season 1 and some of the things we wanted to see more of. And one of Sam's very first scenes, when Ted gives Sam one of the army men that Ted's son has given him to protect him, and Sam's birthday, Sam talks about how, you know, the imperialism of the American army is something that doesn't sit well with him. And right away you realize, okay, as Ted is realizing, like, these guys are from all over. Like, it's an interesting opportunity to tell a lot of cultural stories, because football really is, this cultural mix. You've got players from all over the world playing, for teams in England. And so these locker rooms are really interesting places to be. And such that, you know, what you often find is you find, like, a player who grew up in Africa and maybe speaks French or English as a result of his time in Africa, along with any other languages he may speak from just being a native of whatever country. And then maybe he goes away as a young player, like at age 16 or 17, to Germany and picks up German and speaks German for 5 or 6 years. And you maybe are talking about somebody who speaks French and German fluently and has some broken English, and then maybe moves to England and can communicate with their manager in German because their manager managed in Germany, or can communicate in French because their manager's French, but not English with their English teammates. It's just fascinating the way that these locker rooms exist in football, especially in Europe. And so the opportunity with the Sam character being from Nigeria and having a background where he was thoughtful and really immediately reflected that back to Ted meant I think a lot of us were interested in seeing stories about Sam. It was a character I think they just barely scratched the surface of, along with Danny Rojas in season one. And of course, as we started season two, what do we have? We have a big Danny Rojas story right away. We didn't really penetrate the psyche too much of Danny Rojas, and the takeaway seemed
to
be that.
What are you talking about? What about that nightmare scene with him killing the cartoon dog all over again? Football is death. We see a little bit about his love life beyond football. We learned so much about Danny.
We got deep into that psyche, and Dr. Fieldstone cured him by reminding him of his catchphrase that football is life. So I don't know, we got a lot more depth with Sam, and I'm so thrilled for it. I am so thrilled for it. And look, this kind of subject, as I've talked about on this podcast, that it's a subject that you really cannot avoid if you really want to go there with regard to what modern football is dealing with, or the issues that modern football reflects, modern sport in general. And for them to have done so elegantly with Sam, to have it be so relatable, this is a family thing. It comes from family, which is an issue that's super important on this show, specifically the father, which is an issue that is super important on this show as well. And it is so much more relatable because of that. Sam does not want to let his family down. His family means so much to him, and his family are remarking on this. It is a racial issue, of course, colonialism, especially all over the world. You cannot ignore the legacy and the way that that is institutionalized so much. But it is different to, per se, speaking out on like a very clear issue that is in the zeitgeist, like Black Lives Matter. This comes at it from an environmental perspective, which, like, environmental racism is super important, and it is not something that gets the hot airplay. It isn't something that plays as well in Twitter videos and in things that can go viral. But it is no less form of racism. And for the show to be subtle about it in this way, I thought was very clever, and I thought extremely effective in giving them the opportunity to take on a story like this and do so head on, but not do so in a way that felt inauthentic or felt, at least to me, felt forced. It felt natural. It felt really understandable. And I think as a result, probably a lot more effective in terms of understanding the messaging. So I think they did an excellent job with it. And I was so glad to see it. I stay up late and I watch these episodes as soon as they come out at midnight. And so I was very curious to see, as soon as I got done watching this, what the response to this episode would be. I went to bed a little bit worried that there would be some backlash, or people with different opinions or different backgrounds would say they fumbled it.
Yeah, from people who don't understand anything that Ted Lasso is aiming for at all.
Yes, I figured there would be backlash from them. I was worried there would be backlash for people that did understand it and whose perspective is probably more valid than mine, or who more on point than mine. And I didn't see that feedback or that backlash. So I'm thankful for that. I really am. Not that I would have been unthankful or ungrateful if I did see it, but I'm thankful that it appears that the show nailed this to people that are fans of the show. And I think that was really important that they did that, that people didn't feel like it wasn't something other than, you know, really nice and powerful and beautiful and all the things that it was.
It was such a great episode, not just for Sam and the way this character negotiates this really difficult issue of being so incredibly proud about a thing and so incredibly excited about you know, a spotlight moment, the kind of thing that, you know, when you are in the public eye, you dream of these opportunities, you hope for this kind of success. And to, of course, as you say, and I think that father issues have been prevalent on Ted Lasso from the jump, but especially this season so far, or maybe it just stands out more because because we were like watching it on such a granular level, but it does feel more prominent here in season two, that for it to come from Sam's father to point out the ways in which the partnership with Dubai Air feels like a slap in the face, and like what's underneath it, and the whole aspect of Cerinthium Oil and the complicated relationship with Nigeria that that this represents for Sam, and his navigation of going from something that he's so excited about to finding his way through that and feeling very, very set and solid in his positioning against that, was really, really beautiful to see, from like, you know, taping off the uniform to the moment that he gets to speak to the press and really articulate where he's coming from. But one of the ways that I really loved this episode was not just through Sam, though him most of all, but the way that this story is reflected with so many of the other characters on the show, from Rebecca, and how this weaves in with Rebecca's storyline, to most especially, you know, the locker room and the team, and the incredible Jamie Tart moment of like, throw me the tape, and he tapes his thing off. We're a team. We have to wear the same kit, and everybody coming out. I just thought it was really, really moving. And I think the kind of, I don't know, the kind of idealism and the unity that you hope for more often in our actual world, that I think Ted Lasso often drives at. I think taking on the issues that this episode took on through the lens that it took it on, through the lens that it framed it through, with these characters and the way that it reflected back on all of them, was magnificently told. I loved that aspect of it, that they were able to turn a really personal story for a character into this really great showcase for the greater ensemble.
Yes, definitely. And you've got an opportunity here in season two. The episode count is larger. We've got some fan favorites that have emerged, and we've got an entire bench of people to really deliver on when you talk about the ensemble. So there is this, I think, this great connection that can evolve, and we're starting to see that. We're starting to see some of the other players come to the fore a little bit more. And again, when you talk about these three episodes together, you sort of can't ignore the fact that there are certain faces you're just seeing more, that are talking more, that are getting more time than they did before. And so to see the way that this played with the whole team, I thought was really powerful and very effective. It was also not for nothing. The whole team was piling on Jamie Tart. Like, the whole team was piling on Sam when he got the picture. Like, we're seeing a lot of great moments of camaraderie of the team. And it's interesting because they were on a streak of draws, of you know, tying all these matches. And now they've broken the streak with a loss, and they're still thrilled. They have seemingly adapted a lot of the positives of Ted Lasso, the character, in terms of paying attention to each other, being kind and decent to each other, listening to each other. The team itself seems to be doing much better. Sam emerging as a leader in that locker room and as a voice is exceptionally welcomed by me. And I think the show will be better for it. With the more depth that we get to these characters, we will care more about their on-pitch results, because we will care more about them as individuals. And that's a way, I think, the first season, we just didn't get enough time to really make the crushing blow of relegation land for a lot of these people. We didn't have to sit with how disappointing it was to these players. We didn't have to sit with the aftermath of that. We don't really know too many of them, and we didn't get into like how much that might have hurt them. We are seeing the aftershocks of it, and I think it's really good to see how this plays out. So I just think this episode did a really, I think you're right to observe that not only does the center story with Sam reflect aspects of Rebecca, but other characters as well. It all tied together really well. It's just a very well-written episode. I think they got a pinch hitter for this, Ashley Nicole Black, who I do not believe is in the Ted Lasso writer's room per se, but did get credit, writing credit, and wrote this episode, Do the Rightest Thing. Ashley Nicole Black, probably best known for her work on a Black Lady sketch show, but also a longtime writer on the show Full Frontal with Samantha Bee. So they definitely brought in a mercenary or heavy hitter to deliver this episode for them. And I think mission accomplished for sure.
Directed by Ezra Edelman, who won the Academy Award for the Best Documentary Feature and the Primetime Emmy Award for Outstanding Directing for Nonfiction Programming for directing OJ Made in America.
Oh, wow.
So really high pedigree behind this episode. So if this one landed, not by accident, really just like excellence across the board.
And I think a credit to Ted Lasso, the production team, for having the understanding and I think the self-consciousness, if you will, to say, listen, it's okay if we get these people from different projects who aren't our people, who aren't our thing. This isn't a closed set. We're going to bring in Ezra Edelman, who directed, you know, OJ 30 for 30, and directed a lot of other sports documentaries. We're going to bring him in. He's not a Ted Lasso guy. And we're going to bring in Ashley Nicole Black, who is not known for our show, but is known, for, the ability to have a comedic take on issues that are serious. So I just think really just all around, an episode that, I mean, we're lucky. This is the third episode of the season, Josh. Certainly this has to bode well for the rest of the season that we have a high watermark this early into the run.
Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, it's interesting because I feel like there has been this, you know, this sort of constant refrain among a lot of the people who I'm seeing engaging with Ted Lasso, certainly some of the feedback that we've gotten along the way that we've even discussed on the podcast about, like, maybe something feeling slightly tonally off, like almost like too self-referential, like almost too self-aware with Ted Lasso season two so far. I really sensed very little of that in this episode personally, myself, as well as in a lot of the discourse around this one. Like, it felt like, I don't know. I think like some of those like conversations about is Ted Lasso feeling like a little slight, like a little slim this season, almost a little tiny bit adrift, not unlike AFC Richmond themselves. That seems to have dissipated a decent amount. I think that like when you view this as like, if it was like a three act show, Antonio, the premiere, and this was act three, like, they nailed the landing. And my thinking, like my question now is like, well, what does this inform, not just from a quality standpoint, although certainly like a really high watermark in terms of quality with this episode, you know, one of truly, I think, you know, this is a top three baby episode of Ted Lasso for sure. And I think for many people, an all timer or the all timer thus far. But how does this, you know, where does this go? Where does this lead us? Because one of the things we talked about in our preview show, especially like as it pertained to the Rebecca storyline, was maybe like this idea that like Rebecca, like for some people, it feels like gets off pretty easily considering some of the things that she does in season one, and Ted just forgives her, and like there's a little bit more work to do, but other than that, seems like it's kind of just that. And it was such a major story, and it has sort of like this anticlimax to it. And in another show's hands, the fallout of that dominates like seven episodes in a row or something like that. It's still TBD as to like what other shoes are there to drop as it pertains to Rebecca and some of the moves she made in the first season. But as of now, it's not supremely front of mind for the show. My question, Antonio, is do you feel like, because this is not a nothing deal, like in addition to being like an incredibly character driven story development, Sam's decision and then the rest of the team's decision to stand with Sam, and not just like the players, but Rebecca, you know, all the way to the top, Ted, like everybody being on board, and Rebecca having had that, you know, confrontation with the owner of Dubai Air, or is it the owner of the owner of Dubai Air? I'm maybe a little bit confused on the relationship between her and the person she was calling. Like, this is not nothing stuff. This is important stuff that on most shows would really lord over the remainder of a season. Like, this feels like statement piece stuff that has to be followed down the line. Do you feel like this is going to be like the story energy for the season? Or is, I don't know, predicting Ted Lasso's story almost like a not a worthless enterprise? Otherwise, what are we doing here? But kind of a tricky thing to negotiate that, like, going by convention is maybe something that is not quite so simple to do.
I definitely think it's a little bit of both. I think as far as going by convention goes, we are in a situation where the show's convention, at least one of the main ones, they established at the end of season one when the team gets relegated instead of drawing to stay up, is to be unconventional. Ted Lasso himself, his convention is to be unconventional. It isn't so much subverting expectations, although that's a big one. I think it's more changing expectations by the way, by your approach. And that's sort of Ted Lasso's game, right? Is he does, you don't expect him. You don't see him coming because you assign him some value or you believe that he's going to be a certain type of way based on the way he acts. And you act against Ted Lasso, or you sell him short at your own peril, judging a book by its cover in this instance, or expecting the next thing that you think is going to happen based on the information being presented to you, does not serve you well when you're dealing with Ted Lasso, the character. So I think it flows a little bit more naturally that it wouldn't serve us well to do that when we're dealing with Ted Lasso, the show. It does make it a little frustrating, at least from this seat, when we spend a lot of time, for example, talking about how could Ted be such a jerk and not tell the team about Jamie Tart, and oh boy, Sam looks so upset, and oh boy, aren't we going to see some fallout from that? And then we have the next episode, which, at least directly, has no fallout from that. There is no backlash against Ted. There is no player, you know, fights with Ted over this Jamie issue. There just doesn't seem to be any real hot water that Ted's in as a result of the way he behaved. But we can really talk about what I think is the case with Ted Lasso, which is that the things that are happening are a lot more subtle, and they do pop their heads out and they do emerge and they do stand up and say, hey, I'm Ted Lasso and there's definitely issues with my dad. But they don't necessarily flow in a direct line such that we can directly predict some of this stuff. We can more talk about, I think, thematically and character wise, where we find the characters, use the evidence the show has given us, and talk about where we think we want to see the characters end up. Like, where do we not want to see this go? What do we think could happen? I think getting into direct predictions is a little tricky with this because the show has existed in a world where it takes your expectations and it is aware of them and it tries to make its own way in light of what it knows your expectations will be. And as I said, it's a lot like Ted Lasso, the character. So it makes for a very interesting podcasting experience and certainly an interesting experience from an analysis point of view. That said, I definitely want to make sure we get into, not necessarily right now, but looking at those first three episodes together, because I think there's something more valuable to be done there rather than the episode by episode stuff.
Let's keep touring through the episode specifically. It's a big Jamie Tart episode. Jamie Tart is back on the team. His acclimation is certainly, his reacclimation rather, is certainly a little bumpy. He gets into it with all of his teammates when he tries to say, like, you know, I know, I gotta clean it up, I'm so sorry about everything.
His litany of sins is hilarious.
Oh, it's so funny. you hit on my mom, give Janet me best.
Yes. Not making it better, Jamie.
No, really, really good. And then, of course, like, the cardinal sin is, you got us relegated, mate.
Yes.
You know, and sort of like the, how do you get out from under that aspect of this, I think was I don't know. I really appreciated the way they approached Jamie in this episode and feel like, I don't know, we could have, this is another thing where you could spend the entire season just being like, Jamie Tart is this up and down douchebag who, like, some days he's got the heart of gold and other days he's just back to his old tricks. And certainly there's still miles and miles to go with the season. But I think that they found a way to, like, really, he's on board, and I think, like, his show of solidarity at the end of the episode, like, this isn't just, like, PlayStation 5 nonsense, you know, of him, like, just trying to, like, buy the affection of his teammates. I feel like this was, like, he saw something wrong. He saw a teammate in pain. He saw a teammate trying to do something, and, like, the Ted Lasso way has shined through Jamie in ways that have not been always overly obvious. But I think if you've been tracking his character at all, like, it really connects. Like, he seems to be so much more on board with Ted than he was all season one until that moment that he, you know, he leaves the team in the first place. I thought it was really, really well done. I thought the needle was really properly threaded there. What was your take on everything that went down with Jamie this week?
I do love that. It's interesting you say he reflects the Ted Lasso way, because this episode, I thought, made pretty clear. I do agree with you. Like, I do agree with you that he's on better terms with Ted. And I do agree with you that the Jamie Tartt we saw in season one, that bristled at everything coaching wise and still was an incredibly talented player in spite of it all, seems to be gone. But I do wonder how much his success in this episode, his ultimate success, is a reflection of Jamie Tartt reflecting the Ted Lasso way, or is it Jamie Tartt reflecting the Dr. Sharon Fieldstone way? And that's something where I think we can talk about the Ted connection. If you want to talk about reflecting Ted Lasso, what is Ted Lasso projecting onto the team? Not Led Tasso, which we certainly will get into, but Ted Lasso himself. And I think that's the interesting thing to think about with Jamie, and what I want to track with Jamie is Jamie was always driven by this desire to be the best, to prove he was the best. And we have learned that that desire came from a very negative place, and that Ted in the pub in episode two, when Jamie comes crawling to him and is self-flagellating and talking about all the mistakes he made and everything and why, Jamie talks about how his dad was the reason. And Ted says a lot of the time, like, pressure sometimes produces this. Like, some, you hear about people whose parents were very hard on them and that produced their greatness, like Bono with Joshua Tree. So the question I have is, can Jamie Tartt's good now? Like, he's good with his teammates. He seems to be good. Like, everything is good. But we need, or AFC Richmond needs, Jamie Tartt to be great. And can Jamie Tartt be great without the motivation that was previously driving him? Or will he just get Ted Lasso into this position where he's happy and doesn't really care about results, where he's not results oriented? In a job where your results are 100% how you and everything around you will be judged, not how nice of a person you are or how much personal growth you experience. The judgment occurs, what is printed in the newspapers, if that's still something that happens, is your record. It's your statistics. It's your achievement. You're judged by your achievement, not how great your spirit was or how nice of a teammate you were, but how well your team achieved and how well you achieved. And if Jamie Tartt is an achiever based on negative energy, and you remove that negative energy, and now he's just a freewheeling, nice, goofy guy, is he still going to be an achiever? And I think that's the question that we can put on all of AFC Richmond. And that all comes from the Ted Lasso way.
Yeah. Well, look, a very good therapist may be able to get under the hood on that with Jamie, and may be able to be like, all right, so what were the aspects of that negative space that occupied so much of your drive and your energy that you can rediscover in healthier aspects of your life? Like, how can you tap back into the roots of some of that stuff? And I do think that that's fertile territory for somebody of the professional pedigree of Dr. Sharon and the kind of stuff that she can draw out. And I'll tell you, Antonio, like, I really wanted to see more of Sharon and Jamie together and to see more of that session beyond just Keeley taking Jamie to therapy, which was amazing, by the way. And Jamie sitting down and being like, so I just talk about myself? And she's like, yeah, it's basically, he's like, all right.
all I ever wanted.
You know, he's like a very ideal therapy candidate. Yes. So it's great that he's going to hopefully divine value from it. So, but my initial instinct was to be like kind of frustrated that we didn't get that therapy scene and that we so far haven't really gotten that therapy scene. I actually think it's a really artful choice on the show's part to keep us at arm's length from that stuff, because as much as this is an ensemble show and there are so many different players that we are deeply invested in, both in terms of the literal players but also the cast members just overall, this is a show called Ted Lasso. It's about Ted Lasso and his influence on people primarily, and for Ted, clearly this is like a sacred art that he does not know. This is like Stephen Strange going all the way across the world as like a world-class surgeon, knowing nothing about the mystic arts and having, scoffing at them and not understanding the way they work, and ultimately becoming the master of the mystic arts. Whether or not Ted Lasso is going to end this show with an LCSW, I don't think is really the journey that we are on. But somebody who does not understand necessarily the effectiveness in his previous experience with it being negative, and the way that it interacted with his couples counseling with his wife. So I think it's actually really intelligent of the show from like a story design standpoint for us to not see the Dr. Sharon sessions probably until we get to Ted, would be my thinking, so that we can sort of experience that with him, so that there is, you know, a lot of the lines, like a lot of the dots that we can connect for ourselves in terms of how her work may be influencing the people who she's seeing, hopefully in a largely positive way. But in terms of actually seeing those scenes, I think holding them back from us is going to be ultimately a really fruitful endeavor for when we get there, inevitably, I do think, with Ted directly in the seat across from Sharon.
Yeah, I definitely think so, too. It is, we had kind of speculated about that, right? Like, are we going to even see inside that room until we get in there with Ted? And we have seen inside the room a little bit, but we have not seen the work. We've seen the work in a little bit of a way. Like, we've seen Dr. Fieldstone really sizing Ted up pretty quickly when he comes in and says, "What's your favorite book?" Or the lad Tasso of it all this episode. She's able to read right through Ted pretty quickly. She hasn't gone deep, and she's requested it. And I do think it's good that we're keeping that away. She seems to be very effective. Jamie Tart, before the scene where Keeley marches him up there, Keeley brings up that she's a little bit busy and scrambling because Sam has backed out of the Dubai Air gig. And Jamie says, "That's stupid. You want me to do it?" Like, that's what his mindset is about the Dubai Air gig, that it's stupid to give up a sponsor gig, and that he's happy to step into those shoes and do the photo shoot. Not even a thought about why. Not even a question about why. And then by the next time we really see Jamie Tart with the team, right after his session with Dr. Fieldstone, presumably, he is stepping up and being the first non-Nigerian to black out the Dubai Air with the tape on his jersey. So not only does he go from thinking it was stupid to get rid of it and being willing to just wordlessly question, no questions asked, be the face of this thing, to step up and be with his teammate. I don't know what it is that Dr. Fieldstone told him, but that seems to speak to a Jamie Tart who isn't just cool now, as he puts it, to Keeley, but a Jamie Tart who really actually maybe gets it a little bit and understands and is cool enough about it to say, like, we're, you know, got to wear the same kit, don't we? Same team. He's not stepping up and saying, you know, something that would make the whole situation feel a little more uncomfortable. He's finding a way to make it fit in a way that not only goes for him, but goes for the rest of the group. And I thought, just whatever Dr. Sharon said to him, we don't even need to see it. Like you're saying, it's almost better that we don't. But she, yet again, works magic. That said, the team loses, and the team is now worse off than when before Dr. Sharon came to the team, record-wise. So the question I think we're continuing to ask ourselves, if we care about the fortunes and the fate of AFC Richmond as a football club and not just the members of it, is how do we get there? Like, how do we get to the point where we're on a heater, where we're winning, where we go on a run, where we go on a cup run, where we make it battle our way to sixth place so that we can get into the playoff to see who gets promoted, which we can talk about. I don't know if that's going to be something that comes up on this season, but it's a little bit complicated how they decide who comes back up. And so we want to know how AFC Richmond gets there. And I feel like we're going to spend some time over the next couple of episodes, especially figuring that out. Because if we're going to have an upward trajectory for their results this season, I think it's got to start before the year turns calendar-wise in their season. I think they've got to really get the ball rolling on that soon. And it wouldn't shock me if it's as early as the next episode. But I think that's where the rubber has to meet the road. That's the next steps for these people.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned like the timing on that. And I guess it is the lightest of spoilers to say, but you got it if you have Apple TV Plus, which I assume you do, unless you're a pirate.
Yarr. In which case, you deserve to be spoiled, right?
Yeah, that's the price you pay. Yeah. But that the next episode is called Carol of the Bells, season 2, episode 4. In a lot of the reviews of season 2, there's a lot of talk about a Christmas episode. Certainly seems like that's coming next. So that's the time of year we are in. Just I know that this is a little bit of like longer looking, but to like stay on your point of like where the team's record is at, how bad is it that we are at this time of year where, you know, December, the end of the year, like looking at New Year's with a winless record so far, tons of draws, one loss. This can't be great. We have to like start going on a tear unless it becomes, and if we don't, like it's got to be coming clear pretty quickly in this season that like getting out of relegation is not really on the table, right?
It does. It's a little bit tricky. I mean, the championship season is so long. It's 46 matches, which is a lot.
The date range?
Roughly. Championship is for reference, just in case we wanted to pick a club, the championship started this week. We just started this week, and we will, I believe, go until like early to mid May, I believe, is when the championship will finish. I'm a little hazy on it because COVID has changed the calendar the last few seasons. But yeah, it's going to go to like earlier or mid May. But I mean, you're talking about 46 matches, right? So they've played. Nine, I guess, at this point that we know of is 8 straight draws and one L, right? So,
yeah,
it's not insurmountable by any stretch. The teams that were in contention to be promoted last season, the third place club had 15 draws over the course of the whole season and 7 losses, and they had 24 wins. So, you know, we're just going to have to talk about a scenario where Richmond really goes on a run. And I think that's certainly attainable. Draws are far better than losses. I mean, when you draw a match, you get a point. And you're probably trying to get into the zone of about 75, 74, 73, 70, somewhere in the low 70s of points to get yourself in a position where you can get promoted or be in a position to maybe get promoted. You want to get about 70 points. And, you know, Richmond has 8 from 9 matches. So they got 40, they got 30, what, 35? I'm terrible at math. 37 left to go.
So they have some room. Yeah,
they have some room. They have plenty of room. They just they're clear for takeoff. They just need to take off. And I mean, even if they don't get promoted, there are a lot of other things they can compete for, namely domestic tournaments where all the teams in different leagues compete against each other over the course of the year, and that could still be a second half of the season storyline for them as well. So there are definite like stakes that are in play that they haven't really introduced yet, but that as we get further into the season, we could still be playing for. And I think the dream of promotion is still alive. They'll just really have to go on a heater to get kind of back to a decent spot with that.
Yeah. I want to talk about Ted. And one of the things I want to talk about with Ted is Led Tasso,
the other guy.
You wouldn't like him when he's angry. Ted Lasso hulking out, and sun's getting real low. And one of the constant or consistent rather refrains that I'm seeing from a lot of the feedback that we got was you know, sort of thumbs down on Led Tasso. From Jared. Jared wrote in and said, "I really wish the Led Tasso plotline wasn't in this episode. That felt extremely sitcom-y and didn't work for me at all." There's a lot of different chatter in a similar refrain here, and I think that's fascinating to me because like that is like such a season one thing. You know what I mean? Like Led Tasso feels like such like a, I mean, like Led Tasso feels like probably like the most SNL-y thing that Ted Lasso, the show, has done, you know, outside of Ted Lasso as a character generally, as like a premise that like,
yeah,
the,
I mean,
other
it feels
guy,
like the, it feels like the old premise. It feels like the old Ted Lasso premise a little bit.
Yeah. And so for that to be something that is meeting resistance, I think is fascinating to me from like the sort of like the fan standpoint as narratively, simultaneously, like, the show seems to be kind of, like, hitting up against Ted Lasso's whole vibe. I don't know. Maybe I'm just basic, which I definitely am. I laughed. I thought the Ted Lasso stuff was funny. But if you were to cut something out from the episode, for sure, I think that would be among the very first things that I would cut, considering how much other great stuff is in here. We haven't even talked about Rebecca and Nora and Roy's role and all of that, and I'm very excited to get into all of that. What was your take? Did you like Ted Lasso? Do you feel like is this the point that we should maybe be feeling like a little eye-rolly about the whole thing?
As I said, it did feel like, it felt like the original character. It felt like kind of a something they had on a card in the writer's room. They had Ted Lasso written there, and they just found a way to kind of jam it in. That said, I think it's appropriate on some levels that it didn't work. It worked on a humorous level for me. I laughed really hard at the improvisational element of it when he's going on and on about the part of the ball and the air hole, and, you know, you're going to play with that, and then it's like, oh, you're going to make out with it, you're going to make it your wife. Like, he goes on this just complete tangent. And then I also love the Tim Burton, like the button at the end, like even freaking Dumbo, the way he says it, so exhausted. He was exhausted with the rant. He's exhausted with Tim Burton's antics. Like, I did laugh at that. And I also think the music that was under it was very funny. I don't know why. It just had this sort of manic element to it that worked. It was like this person completely losing it. I have some questions about Ted Lasso, like how Ted Lasso happens. Like, why did he disappear? What did he go do? How did he get himself psyched up? What got himself into the Ted Lasso trance of it all? Like, where was that? That part made me laugh just thinking about it. But I think the fact that it maybe doesn't work is really good, because it doesn't work for the team either. Like, this is not what brings the team together. It's in case of emergency, break glass, last resort, as Coach Beard calls it. And Dr. Fieldstone immediately is like, I see what you're doing. Has it ever even worked?
And they're like, no. Maybe that one time. Yeah. Chuck E. Cheese at work. You guys,
Chuck E. the Cheese.
Do you guys have Chuck E. the Cheese here?
Yeah. Charles Edgar Cheeserton III.
Yeah. that was the only time it worked. So, like, even the show is acknowledging this has never worked. It's just a gag. And so Ted's gags aren't working right now.
Right. And Ted's going, he's digging down to the bottom of the barrel to try to find something to make these things work.
Scraps.
And he put himself in this position. He didn't have to bring Jamie Tart back. Like, he did not have to do that. This is as a result of Ted's own choices. So I don't, you know, Ted's like, I'm out of ideas. Like, well, you're out of ideas because you changed the question. Like, you changed the scenario. You were probably in a good place. Sam believed in this project and believed you did not need to bring Jamie back to win. And we can debate till the cows come home if that's why Ted did it. Did he do it because of what Dr. Fieldstone says to him when his mind seems to be made up about bringing Jamie back? She says, like, is everybody okay with not winning? And then that's when we have to get Jamie Tart the next day. But Sam said, like, I believe in this project. Yes, we've had all these draws, but I believe we're going to win. Don't you? And that's the question I feel like we don't know if Ted is answering himself. Like, don't you? Do you believe that your methods can actually help this team win? I know you believe in the quality of your methods and helping this team become better people, supporting them, providing this environment, this caring, nurturing environment where people listen to each other and people are pleasant with one another. I know you believe in that, and I know it works. But is that enough to win football games? Is that enough to, you can't just smile your way through financial peril. I wish you could. Like, I wish so many lives would be easier if that's all it took to get yourself out of it. But it isn't the way. Like, you can't smile about student fucking loan debt. It doesn't work that way, you know? And so the Ted Lasso ethos, as we've talked about over these, and there's your drinking game, by the way, I said that word again. That has been something that I think really has been the subtle theme of this season, is like, what do we do with the effectiveness of this when smiling your way through it and being nice and being kind and being good is not necessarily enough, or you want more? That being happy isn't just enough. You want to achieve. You want to grow. You want to experience adversity and learn from it. Like, you want and welcome all these experiences. And what if you're not getting that because all you're doing is just in this sunny dispositional mentality? And we've seen, even in the face of Ted's own life, the theme in season one was how his ruthless optimism or relentless optimism was not enough and actually caused problems for him with his marriage. Like, that was the problem that he shortcuts to when he mentions what the couples therapy was like, is that his optimism was put on blast and you can't just smile your way through and make it work. And now I think we're seeing that happen in this season. Ted's pulling out all the stops. And I think what we've seen really subtly through these three episodes is Ted failing over and over. Ted failing and other people and other people's methods succeeding. And I think we saw that with Dr. Fieldstone having probably better success with Jamie than the lead tasso of it all did. Maybe lead tasso primed the pump for the team to welcome Jamie back. I don't know that we know that the lead tasso thing was a direct failure, but I think it's perfectly appropriate that maybe it doesn't land with the audience because it doesn't really land with the team either. And I think that's sort of the point.
To get us from Ted into a storyline that I really want to talk about more is Rebecca and Nora, which also means the return of Sassy. Early on in the episode, the scene of Ted and Sassy seeing each other for the first time, presumably, certainly for the first time for us since their one night stand back in season one. This was from Jen, who wrote in and said, "I liked how the show handled Sassy and Ted, and had nothing to be hidden from Rebecca about their night together. It's just easy and didn't need to be a thing because the show isn't about that kind of drama, just smart choices." I really loved that too. I thought that the first scene between Ted and Sassy all in front of Rebecca, and then when he leaves and Sassy's like, "Yeah, he just talked like that the entire time. It was so great." It's just like really, really funny to me. I really loved that open to the episode. I thought it was great. It was just cool to see Ellie Taylor back on the show. I really liked that character a lot.
It was funny. She's talking about missing her back tattoo. Like if you're like, okay, we're going to have Sassy say one line before Ted walks in. What should we have her talking about?
Yeah.
Tramp stamp. Perfect. We got it. Yeah. It's very fitting and very funny. And the fact that she's saying she misses it is great. Like, that's just, that speaks to somebody who looks at themselves in the mirror naked. And that's, I feel like a very Sassy character note. And hilarious, the way Rebecca spits those biscuits out. For you shippers out there, that's either another great moment in the long trail that you're going to build, biscuit crumb from Rebecca and Ted to whatever their couple name would be. Red, Tebecca, I don't know, Tribeca. But either way, I thought that was really funny. Also, the cobblestone away from the period joke. And Ted's reaction to that, oh, bibbity bobbity booyah, oh, Sassy, yeah. So always great to see you. Just such a straight shooter, so uncomfortable with it. Very, 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 very funny. Very funny.
Yeah.
And you know, an interesting. We've had a biscuits with the boss scene in every one of the episodes, and of course, biscuits with the boss means Ted and Rebecca. And girl talk was the first one, girl listen, and Ted maybe failing to give Rebecca the romantic advice that she needed, and Roy just giving her the lightning bolt speech that was really the advice that she needed or that really resonated with her. And then in the second episode, you know, they had their biscuits with the boss moment where Ted talked about why he was not comfortable with therapy. Rebecca said, you know, she wasn't either. Like, why do I need therapy? That's what we have friends for. And then when it came to unburdening themselves of any thoughts and feelings to each other, it was awkward silence. So that was our second biscuits with the boss. And then this is the third, Ted and Sassy. I mean, why does Ted bringing up, like, is she mine? Like, he knows that that's not true. That's so inappropriate.
Yeah.
How does he know? Like, how does he know that that Rebecca knows about he and Sassy? I guess he just assumed.
It just can't. There has to have been, you know, conversations that we are not privy to. Enough time passes between the ends of season one and the beginning of season two that somehow, some way, this bridge was traversed. You know, like they went here, they discussed it, it came up. I'm thrilled with that though. Like, I'm glad it's not like, Because I think that there's certainly a read on the Ted and Sassy thing in season one that this could be like, you know, this is like a, you know, a door stopper, right? Like, we're just going to wedge this in here and have a real problem. We're not ever going to be able to shut this thing and it's going to be annoying. That's like very sitcom tropey thing, a sitcom tropey thing to do. It seems like that is not going to be the thing that's going down on Ted Lasso. And I'm thankful for it. I don't know. Drink. I don't know. You know, maybe. I hope not. I hope not. But what it does do is it opens the door for Nora, who we had heard about last season, that Rebecca was really close with Sassy's daughter, Nora, who she hasn't seen in a very long time. And now Nora, who's played by Kiki May, is on the show and is exceptional. Just an incredible character.
What is it about these British young British actresses? Like, we've got the Game of Thrones connections.
Bella Ramsey, yeah.
Yes,
Macy Williams, yes.
Incredible stalwarts of these young female British actresses who are coming up, who are just going to rule the world one day, I think.
Let us be ruled. Long may they reign. I'm here for that. Here for it.
Yes.
She's so good. She's so great. Like them at like the, what is this tea ceremony thing that they're at? Like this like Polly Pocket nonsense. Like, I don't know what the hell is going on here, man.
This Polly Pocket nonsense. Indeed, yeah. Rebecca's checklist. It's all the things they used to do when she was a kid, right?
Oh, God. Get out of here with that. And I love that Nora is like, yeah, let's leave. But it's like kind about it, but it's very frank about it. But it's also like, you know, like really throwing it back at Rebecca. She is Sassy's daughter, you know, like very clearly with the way she's like, if I leave, are you gonna abandon me for another 6 years or whatever it is she says? Will I not see you again for another 6 years? It's just like, is ruthless, but like fair. And then like it's said and let's keep going. I really loved her as a character. And I love that like attitude was so prominent, Antonio, so that like when Nora is there sitting in the boss's chair and Sam comes in, that she is like starstruck with Sam in a way that I think like grounds our cynical asses. You know what I mean? Like that, yes. We are equally starstruck and enamored with this guy who has always been just like a wonderful character on the show, but is really going to have a breakout moment in this episode. I think like framing that through her perspective, that Sam is her favorite player, and like you don't need any elaboration on why. Like, she's just very reflective of all the things you should be feeling about Sam Obasanya.
I think that's a really good observation, and not something that really occurred to me while watching, is that her eyes are so valuable for us as outsiders or maybe as insiders to the club, just seeing all these people's moments and not realizing the influence level. There's a really subtle way to get at how influential these footballers can be, how influential these athletes can be, why that matters to certain people of certain generations, especially, and whose heroes they really are. And why. I thought this was a really subtle way to do that. And it didn't really pop for me in the show, not because the show failed, but because maybe I'm anesthetized to that. Like, maybe I'm just numb for it and don't see, I'm incapable of necessarily widening my eyes in that way because I'm so entrenched in the all the aspects of sports. And maybe that's part of it. But it was really a good reminder. And I think you're right. Excellent actress, like we were saying. Great moments throughout. I love that she reflects her mother so much. When you talk about the moments of her saying, "You're not going to be gone for 6 years, are you?" Like, that's the exact same read and not letting Rebecca off the hook, not in a mean way, but in a responsible human being to another human being way, not letting her off the hook for what happened. Sassy really does call it out in season one, basically saying like, yes, Rupert is a monster and he did all these terrible things to you, but you went. Like,
you walked every step.
You watch every step. And so it makes sense that Sassy's daughter, Nora, is so much a reflection of Sassy with regard to not taking any of Rebecca's shit, not giving her a real quarter for it, like not necessarily just constantly making her feel miserable and being like one note and sour about it, but also not letting it go and making it clear that like your behavior and your actions, they had emotional consequences for me that I probably haven't even fully unpacked yet. And so I think it's important that we continue to talk about it. That's the only way we're going to get over it and not have any like just residual resentment. So Rebecca's relationship with Nora in this episode was fantastic. Not for nothing. Seemingly some of the uncomfort levels or confusion unlocked by yet again another brilliant advice moment from Roy Kent. Just continuing to do the work, Josh.
Yeah. Roy has been fantastic this season. The utilization of Roy Kent, if the way the show wants to use Roy moving forward is to have him just like come in and like Danny Tanner some advice to the characters on the show and like very special episode this thing in like a Roy Kent way while also doing the sportscaster stuff and being hysterical. What does he say about Jamie that he hopes he dies from the incurable condition of being a little bitch?
Yes.
such a good line.
I'm loving that Chris Kamara is just loving Roy Kent at that desk, just like cracking up at his antics. I'm loving that.
You got to believe that they like filmed all of that stuff in a block. Right. Like,
I'm sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm sure. Cause you can only get those guest stars probably for a limited time.
We're going to get it all season long. We're going to get it all season long. And Roy's always going to be wearing the black, take the black. Yep. You know, he's always going to be in uniform and we'll get these interstitials throughout the season and it'll be absolutely incredible. But yeah, like if this is Roy Kent on Ted Lasso moving forward, I don't know that I need much more, to be completely honest. And I know how much you love the character and I love his like emotional journey and how we've been on it, but like he's like kind of solid right now, and I wish this for him, and I would like for him to like model this for other characters moving forward in his Roy Kent way, and I hope for nothing but the absolute very best for him, which is not typically what happens to television characters because you need drama. I hope for no drama for Roy Kent, Antonio.
It's really interesting because the you need drama part has been front of mind for me. It's like, okay, so if this is Roy Kent, just sort of adrift in the post-retirement life, doing a little pundit work, cracking wise, hanging out with the yoga moms, walking around with Phoebe, like, where's the drama come from? Like, this is a guy who seemingly does understand himself pretty well. He understands himself well enough to know why his kinks are his kinks. He understands himself well enough to know who to ask for help and to be okay with asking for it. He just seems to be very well adjusted in a lot of respects. He still is miles away from AFC Richmond, even though he's asked to comment on it. He's got no relationship with Ted. That part, all that stuff feels very fixable to me. It feels like something that needs to be fixed. Like as much as we say, Roy's got it figured out and he's okay, that being such a huge blind spot does not feel okay to me. Him not being part of AFC Richmond does not feel okay to me. It obviously feels like there's still some huge part of him that wants to play and is incapable of being around the club without that really crashing him down. He knows he can't be there from a wellness standpoint. Roy Kent seems to be the kind of guy that knows what he does need to do and doesn't need to do in terms of his mental health. And his mental health is such that right now, it doesn't seem like he even wants to talk to Ted Lasso, let alone be around AFC Richmond. So I do think there is that to fill in.
Yeah, obviously we have to go there.
I also wonder, like, he's with Phoebe all the time. So on a show that puts parental relationships front and center so vividly, he is more of the surrogate parent in the way that Rebecca is with Nora. We know that, you know, we don't know what's going on all the way with Nora's father. We don't know what Phoebe's parents are up to. I suspect there could be something more there. That's a way to bring drama to the Roy Kent life without necessarily complicating he and Keeley, without complicating his relationship to football, without putting him in a position where he has to feel like he's got to come back. I do feel like you could do something with regard to his family life, because he's with Phoebe so much. It just makes me feel like her parents maybe are working all the time. Maybe it's a single parent household. Whatever it is, there's some drama to
maybe
that.
Maybe she just loves her Uncle Roy and wants to go to the dentist with him and do all these other things.
Yeah, go eat ice cream for dinner, get bought dolls. I mean, he's coaching her team. He's doing a lot of traditional parental stuff. So I don't know. He's reading her to bed at night. Like, I don't know. We don't know that. I mean, if you're asking me to speculate about like what are, there's no drama in Roy Kent. Like, what's the arc? Like, how do we get from point A to point B if he's just going to stay happily in point A the whole time and we're not going to have a problem with that? I do feel like that the Phoebe stuff is a way in a way that wouldn't jeopardize the rest of the show and would take this character we love and put their emotions and their heart in something in a way that I think we could really get some grist out of. So I think that's something we could do. I don't know. It just seems like that's what the show has been suggesting. And that could be it. It could also be that Roy does try to play again. We know he had a devastating injury. We have a ton of time hasn't passed. I don't see the after effects of it. We don't see him in rehab. We don't see him in pain. We don't see him attempting to do football related things and failing. We don't really know where he's at with the injury, but it wouldn't be the first time that someone attempted a comeback, and the championship might be a kinder place for that to happen than in the Premiership. So I wouldn't rule that out either. Even though I don't think Roy needs it. If we come to a position where the team needs Roy, or for whatever reason he wants to get back to it, I think we could go there. And I'm not saying I would be against it. I trust the show to handle that. They're going to do something with Roy Kent because we care about him. They're going to do something other than just have him deployed to give advice and to crack wise at football. He's going to have some
for sure
drama in his life, and it's just a matter of what it's going to be.
In living in the space in between episodes, in the week off from that, you know, 30-ish minutes that you spend watching an episode of Ted Lasso until you do it all over again. That's where I'm living right now. And here in this world, I want nothing but the absolute best for Roy. And that could mean seeing very little of him. But I know that we will get to these moments in the future that I will be so thrilled that we have. Obviously, there's just still so much more to do with him. It's just what right. I wish for him. If all we get from Roy is stuff like this throughout the season, Dianu, it will suffice me. this is from Ariel. And I think that this takes us nicely into, you know, something that I know that we want to talk through before we close out today. Ariel wrote in and said, regarding the Brendan Hunt tweet about how they wrote episodes 1 through 3, thinking they'd be released all at the same time. It's interesting to trace the storyline of the Roy and Rebecca pair specifically. Now that there's not the old power dynamic between them, they're free to just develop a friendship, and it's working really well. He's the one that gave her the dating advice in episode 1 about how she deserves to feel like she's been struck by effing lightning. In this episode, he gives her the advice on how to treat Sassy's daughter, Nora. When Rebecca tries it out and Nora has an enthusiastic response, the joy on her face is so genuine. It's more incredible work from Hannah Waddingham, and such a great evolution to see her character accepting goodness and enjoying the spread of happiness. Roy is clearly a great influence on her, and it's lovely to see another positive platonic friendship between adults. I know that there were a lot of people, Antonio, who really loved the scene between Rebecca and Roy specifically. And I think that that's a great way of sort of easing into this next bit, because you did watch these three episodes in quick succession after knowing that they were intended to be viewed in that way. Let's talk through some of the observations there, and specifically some of the character arcs that you think are starting to crystallize a little bit more for you, having watched these three episodes in that way.
I think the Roy and Rebecca entry point is a good one, because I do feel like we sold Rebecca a little bit short by transitioning from Rebecca and Nora directly into how Rebecca's episode was affected by the advice she got from Roy. Because what we've seen from Rebecca over the course of these three episodes is a Rebecca free of Rupert. Like, yes, the training ground is still named for some reason, the Rupert Mannion training ground. I feel like that needs to change. If we do have financial issues with the team, maybe they'll sell it to someone like Nando's, like they'll do the Nando's Perry Perry training ground.
There's a lot of love for Nando's apparently out there. Just a ton of reactions to the Nando's discussion last week.
All podcasts are food podcasts, Josh.
It's definitely true. All channels are snack channels.
Yes. So the Rebecca and Rupert story dominated Rebecca's story in season 1. We had to make Rebecca great again. That is necessarily positioning her her wellness or her greatness in direct conflict or direct relation with her relationships with men. And I think that's a little bit just shoddy for me. Not shoddy, but like Rebecca deserves a lot more. I love to see her embracing the BAB of it all. I love to see her embracing that boss ass bitch mentality that Nora is helping her channel. I really loved the scene in this episode with the two of them writing the email, and Nora speaking the unspoken part, saying the quiet part loudly, and Rebecca cleaning it up all except for the boss ass bitch at the end. So I think Rebecca's story this season has been about her dating life. And yet again, frustrating because a character's worth or definition is being determined by their position relationship wise to, in this case, male characters. So a little bit frustrating, right? But I think on the underside of that is Rebecca's relationship with Rebecca. And I think that's the most important relationship that Rebecca has had in the course of this whole show. And that's the one I think we're really seeing her growth and her coming to grips with. I need to let myself be okay to be loved by someone wonderful. I deserve that, right? That's her episode one storyline is John Wayne's Night and everything that goes into her dating someone like that and everything that goes into her realizing that she deserves better, that she's reminded of Roy by Roy in this episode. In episode two with Rebecca, we have her talking about her online dating profile yet again and suggesting like whether or not filthy rich is something that should appropriately be in that profile or not. So yet again, Rebecca's what's happening in her mind that we could pick up on is, oh, Rebecca's putting herself out there again. And is she okay to date? And what kind of people will she date? And what kind of online profile should she write? And in this episode, again, we've got Rebecca's relationships and Rebecca's dating. It's there. She's looking at Keeley's new app. She's reminded of the costs of her choosing relationships in a certain way, with Nora and Sassy being so front of mind in this episode, and where she has leaned in the wrong direction in relationships in the past. So I don't think we can talk about Rebecca without talking about how the show is putting her relationships still front of mind and front of story. But her relationship with herself, I think, is the most important one. And I think that's the one we are seeing real growth on in the course of this season. Last season, she was in such a hurt place and she did hurtful things as a result. This season, she's feeling better. And so I think what I'm really looking forward to seeing is Rebecca being a BAB, like really delivering for AFC Richmond, for all the people that work there, for the people that care about her, and the people that care about the people at AFC Richmond. I know there's going to be conflict. I know there's going to be peril. I'm really looking forward to seeing Rebecca deliver as a result of all the growth that she's experienced, personal growth, self-love. I just cannot wait to see how that plays out. So that's really been, I think, a pretty significant one. I think we're hitting those. If you look at three episodes together, I mean, that's where we're at with Rebecca. And we talked about Roy. I think another interesting one, of course, is Sam. We have him mentioned right at the beginning of the season when Ted is, they said, Ted, what about the eighth straight draw or whatever? And Ted says, you know what? Sam's really stepping up. He's filling that Roy Kent-sized hole. Like, we hear right away that Sam is making a difference. Sam is really growing into himself. This is not just a guy whose stats had all been down since he was in Nigeria. This is a guy who is on the up. Like, he really is ascendant. Sam's quiet arc in season one is that Ted wanted him to be used more in the midfield instead of a defender. And what that ultimately means is having a more positive outcome on the match, leading to goal contributions in a more significant way, getting the ball forward more significantly, not as a defender per se, but somebody who is going to contribute in the midfield and be involved in more of the game and be trusted to be involved in both facets of the game. If he's a box-to-box midfielder like Roy Kent, that means he's really going all the way back in his own half and defending well, going into his team's box and adding to the defense there, carrying the ball forward, and going all the way to the other team's box and contributing on that end. So he is a player who's having a significant impact on the team. We find that out in episode one. In episode two, obviously, we have the key moments where he's so upset about Jamie. But the significant thing, I think, there is that Sam believes. Sam is in on the sign. Sam believes that this team will win and this project will work, and they don't need to bring in a shitty person who is great at football but is shitty and ruin this, because it will work. And we see how positively supported Sam is. And then we see Ted encouraging him to use his voice. And then in episode three, we see the after effects of all of that. He's a more influential player. Does Dubai Air request Sam specifically, which we know they do, because he's a more influential player now? Or do they request him specifically because he's the kind of guy that can help them cover up their sins, the sins of their parent company? Open question, right? Either way, Sam is a prominent face of this team, and we see what he does with that platform. And it's so wonderful in this episode. So the three episodes, if we watch them at once for Sam, do present a very good arc there as well. The really interesting one I want your feedback on, though, Josh, is Ted Lasso himself.
Yeah.
Like, what is the arc of Ted Lasso?
Yeah, I mean, well, I think to do it as like a three-episode arc is like, it's not enough. There's so much happening here at like a kind of like snail's pace, right? Like, this is a slow burn. And I think that we've seized on it over the last couple of... You know, we've seized on it over the last couple of conversations, and more so this week is like the Ted Lasso way ain't working. Like, people are happy, but I think like you really hit on it. We're losing, you know, and there are consequences, like significant life altering consequences to performing the way that they are currently performing. You know, they've only lost the one time, but they're not doing great. The draws are not great. They should be wins. We should be winning some of these. There are people who are it, and it's not as simple as saying it's like Dr. Sharon is the one who's making inroads this season. I think like the stuff that happens through Sam's leadership and Jamie's own leadership as well. Like, there's so much that's happening internally within the locker room, within the players. It's not lost on me that this huge monumental moment for the show what do you stand for, to borrow from another show, and what this show is standing for in this moment and what these characters are standing for in this moment has basically absolutely nothing. And I think you could strip basically from it, has absolutely nothing to do with Ted. Right? Like, he's not involved. He's surprised when he's watching them take to the pitch and they've all taped their shirts. This is not something he was in on. He's on the outside looking in of this incredibly important thing that's happening for the characters and presumably for the story writ large. I think the fact that Ted Lasso is an outsider has been central to the idea of Ted Lasso, the show, but the journey of season one is about how he like worms his way into the inside. As he and Beard say about, I think it's about Roy, right? When they're like, he's going to be so mad when we win him over. Yep. You know, like, no one was mad ultimately that he won them over in season one. But there are ways in which this show fundamentally is about an outsider. So I think that the whether it's the three episode arc for Ted may be too small a sample size still, but I still think that the show is absolutely, for Ted Lasso as a character, very much about tracking Ted as an outsider. And I think it's tracking that journey toward the center, if he can get there, in a different way. He's almost like he's outside of himself. We're going to have to get into that.
If you want, when you start the episode three, we've got A Hand in My Pocket by Alanis Morissette, right? And some of the lyrics of that song, I'm sane, but I'm overwhelmed. I'm lost, but I'm hopeful. Those are Ted Lasso to a T.
Yeah.
And especially where we find Ted Lasso just at the beginning of this episode, at this point in his journey, all of it. He is sane, but he's overwhelmed, and he is lost, but he's hopeful. And is that enough? Like, is that enough? I submit to you that it's not. Later in the episode, we have a crack about dolls, which is ostensibly just about dolls. It is about these orphan dolls with all these blacks, these stories that have like just all these negative marks on them. These horrible orphan stories of these dolls. This must be a very specific thing to the British doll market, that this is not hitting the same way for those who understand it well. But the historical doll game in America is strong, and Rebecca chalks this up to Americans' misguided sense of triumph. And I feel like that's something that Ted is carrying around, a misguided sense of triumph. Like, he has this very American, like, wide-eyed, like, we're just going to break down this wall, and that's what's going to happen. It's just going to happen through the power of our positive thinking and the fact that I can get through anything. Adversity is just something for me to overcome. And I think we're seeing what it's like to live in that with Ted. It's not lost on me that at the beginning, when Ted is questioned directly about, oh, what about bringing Jamie Tart back? And Ted says, I'm more like his Mr. Miyagi with less yard work, right? That's not true, because he does not do well by Jamie Tart. Like, it is the doctor who Jamie is dragged into Dr. Fieldstone's office, and then it is only after that that we see him break through with the team. Ted and Jamie can't even get on the same page about the PS5s, and Jamie, with one little crack, can get a leg up on Ted in that regard. So it just feels like Ted is a little bit clueless and is a little bit triumphant in his own misguided sense. And the show is making that a little bit clear, I think, without saying it overtly. It's saying it covertly. And it isn't just not winning. We have an example in this episode where the show goes out of its way to tell us they were heavily favored against Coventry City and still lost. They didn't just draw, they lost in a heavily favored match. And so think about it this way. You've got a team where all these fortunes are going in a certain direction. You've got a guy who's sure of all these methods, who's trying literally his last resort stuff, and it's not working. He still thinks that it's working or is taking some credit for it. He's on the outside of some of his players' most poignant and important moments of the entire series. He's not involved. You could say that he's connected because he put Sam in a position where Sam felt comfortable speaking his mind. And I think that that's true. But Ted's direct link to some of these successes is maybe not there. That said, he's still such a positive force. He's such a good ally for Sam in that moment, in the way that a lot of coaches need to be, and many have failed at being, especially in American football, just an abysmal record of standing up for their players when they were sticking their necks out. Such an abysmal, abysmal record. Same thing with Major League Baseball. Less so to an extent with the NBA. You've got coaches like Greg Popovich, who I love, is like a top five human being. You've got Steve Kerr. These coaches are out there understanding that their view and all, their role in all this, and really being articulate about it and standing up for their players and their players' rights and everything that's going on in society is something that their players can't ignore. And these coaches stand up for their players. And Ted's allyship is a lot more like that. So Ted's still doing very good things, and his heart is still in the right place. It just isn't working. And he kind of is intimating or thinks that it is, or that it could work. And it's not. So there are things about Ted's leadership that are working wonders. The atmosphere at the club seems to be great. Dr. Fieldstone observed this in episode two. But the results just aren't there on the field. And the question is, how do you turn what Ted is doing into something like that? And I think that's where Ted is struggling. And it wouldn't surprise me if it gets worse for Ted before it gets better in terms of emotionally, because we haven't really seen that piece of it yet. We had a little bit of a hint of it in episode one, where he really brings up the things that make you cry, just thinking that they existed, and also make you cry because you no longer have them. His marriage and stuff that really we dealt with in season one, it's probably still very front of Ted's mind. And we just really haven't sat with that for a while. And it does feel like it's coming. I mean, the guy had a mental breakdown this episode and lead tassoed his way all over the joint. So what is next for Ted? It feels like there's going to be some dark days ahead before we see the light, for sure.
I want to get into some feedback before we do free kicks and clean up the rest of the episode. Again, you can send your feedback in TedLasso@postshowrecaps.com, or you can hit us up in the Ted Lasso channel in the Post Show Recaps Patreon Discord. And again, since episode four is going to be coming your way a little bit late, this is a really great opportunity next week to get that feedback in. You've got some room to do it, not so much of a tight time crunch. So TedLasso@postshowrecaps.com, please, we want to read your stuff. This came from Ted, not Lasso. Ted wrote in, "I really loved this episode. It was especially heartwarming, and the Rebecca and Nora scenes were such a welcome surprise. I thought the first two episodes were perfectly fine, but this episode had everything that I love about Ted Lasso." That was a vibe that was persistent among many of the people who wrote in. This came our way from Mars Bars, who wrote in, I was standing up and cheer crying like I was at an actual game when Jamie joined in with the team and when they took the pitch. This show. Also really loved the Nora and Rebecca relationship in this episode. It speaks to so many relationships in my own life that got paused for one reason or another, and you have to adjust to where the person is now. From Tova wrote in and said, I love Sam. I loved his storyline in this episode. I was heartbroken to see the ad campaign he was so proud of being for such a corrupt company that was destroying his home country. But his actions afterward were perfect. Sam taking a stand was moving. One of the best things about sports is when a team rallies around a member who is hurting. The willingness of the team to stand in solidarity with Sam and their Nigerian teammates was beautiful. If that doesn't bring a tear to your eye, I don't know what will. The fallout will likely be swift and ugly, but for one episode at least, we are left with a beautiful moment of unity. Does this show, Antonio, this is me now, do you anticipate the swift and ugly reaction? Is that territory that this show traverses?
It's a fascinating thing to consider, because again, I read on that rant earlier about how this show lives in expectations maybe not being met in the way that you expected, but in a way that feels appropriate. So it does feel like there'll be fallout. It seems like the fallout will be swift. The ugly part, I'm not sure, because there's a world in which this gets exceptionally ugly.
Yeah.
Trent Crim, being the dickhead that he is, decided that he needed to make this crystalline that Sam was accusing the Nigerian government of corruption. And there's a world where if Sam's parents are still in Nigeria, this is a very, very ugly thing. I mean, not for nothing, but the whole cerithium of it all is, as far as I can tell, very allegorically loosely connected, not even very loosely, just not even that loosely is my point, connected to Shell oil. Yeah. Cerithium, I believe, is a kind of snail shell. But Shell oil has had human rights issues with environmental spills in the same place, in the Niger Delta. So these are not made up things. These are very, very real things. As I said, the racial consequences of colonialism, of the way that that continent is treated still to this day, and everything that goes on there is just so abhorrent by any Western standard that we really could choose to, if we wanted to, spend a real long deep dive there. And the things that Shell Oil has been accused of and done as a result of that case include executing people that are trying to put them on blast. I mean, nothing short of that. Nothing short of hiring people to kill the people that are being put on blast. And not for nothing, this happens in South America. This happens with the oil companies or environmental degradation purveyors all over the world. They engage in these things where they legitimately kill people who are protesting against them. So it's really, when you say ugly, what is ugly? Because I think obviously what we're really teeing off is the AFC Richmond struggling financially storyline. If you want to map Ted Lasso to Major League, the movie, which the first season has a very similar plot, we can maybe do that as a bonus podcast. But if you want to do that, then you cannot ignore the fact that we could enter an era where we really see the cost-cutting era of AFC Richmond. Those showers could go back to low flow. We could have you reusing the same tapes. The jerseys could smell. There's a lot we could get into from a comic perspective of a team that's being run on bubblegum and shoestrings kind of budget. So that doesn't have to be ugly. It can be funny, but I think that's going to be our direct fallout. I definitely think they're going to lose the sponsor. They're probably in the way that like only the Premier League can, in a very specific way. Sometimes a team will get promoted to the Premier League and you'll see advertisements all over their home ground that are for like basically local businesses in some out of the way town in England. And it's always really funny when you've got examples of that where it comes up and it's like, this is exceptionally British. Like it is exceptionally specific to this world. So we could see a very hilarious kind of world where AFC Richmond is struggling for money and has to kind of pander to local businesses or local sponsors or the kind of sponsors who aren't interested in seeing their name in the Premier League because it's not happening right now. So that could be funny and could be a thing we do. But there's an opportunity for an ugly fallout. I also want to go back to Mars Bars. Mars Bars also in the Discord posted a link to a podcast episode that Jason Sudeikis and Brendan Hunt did with Brené Brown, who is a social worker, a professor, a researcher, a thinker, somebody who I didn't know very well before that podcast. I've only really heard the name, and I loved that podcast. I want to thank Mars Bars for posting that. It was from October of 2020, so it was from before the show was where the show is now. The show had blown up, obviously, but maybe not to the extent. The way they talk about the show in that podcast is unique, and very specific, to some of the things that, that Professor has researched, and some of the things that, that went into the show. It seems very clear to me that her research influenced the writing of the show. And they say as much in that podcast. So it's a fascinating podcast. And I want to thank Mars Bars for putting that in the Discord. I would not have been able to listen to that if not. So thank you very much for sharing that. And I encourage people to check that out. The podcast is called Unlocking Us. If you go into like the podcast feed of it, you're not going to be able to find the older episode, but it is on Spotify. If you have Spotify, which in and of itself is a terrible corporation.
To that point, your friend and mine, the great Brooklyn Zed, had been messaging me about Ted Lasso. They said that this was their favorite episode by far so far. I may be inserting by far, but Zed said, this has been my favorite episode of Ted Lasso. What did they say? I love the Rebecca and Nora stuff and how Roy played into it and how Keeley handled Jamie and his interaction with Dr. Fieldstone. All the secondary plots were really great this week, but the Sam storyline was just incredible, and the whole team standing in solidarity with his protest and the way Ted gave him a platform to speak about it to the press was also powerful and good. I look forward to seeing this build. It's interesting to see a show on a network like Apple TV, which is so connected to producing products, not just a streaming service, tackle the idea of a corporation impacting a country and the government's involvement in it. Very salient points. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, Zed and I are very much kindred spirits in that regard, for sure. And the Foxconn, the iPhone construction, the degradation, just everything that Apple has contributed to, definitely not lost. It is, I think, one of those extremely complicated situations we find ourselves in this modern world, where corporations are so big that one arm of one corporation can be ripping the other arm of the other corporation, left, right, and center.
It's Hydra, baby.
The Simpsons did this, right? The Simpsons did this on Fox for years.
Yeah.
They put Fox on blast. I'm sure they continue to do so. But they put Fox on blast for years on Fox and using the platform that Fox was providing them. So it isn't a great television tradition to do this. I mean, going all the way back, the commercials used to be part of the program in a way that was not sustainable. The business models were far less insipid. It were just more overt. So you would have like the Jack Benny program brought to you by Lucky Strike, and a huge part of the program would be a comedic bit featuring this quartet of singers for Lucky Strike cigarettes. And what were they going to do this week? And the commercial became a joke. On the Alfred Hitchcock Presents TV show, he used to make fun of the ads before they went to commercial. He used to basically say, commercials are terrible. Go have your soul sucked for 30 seconds and come back to this program because they're the ones that are paying us to make it. Like, he would literally put the advertisers on blast. This was in the 50s. So we have come a long way, but we've only come so far as to say the people that are paying for this show to be made are the same people that are causing the kind of problems that this show is putting front and center. So it is fascinating, for sure, to think about this place in this modern world that we find ourselves in. I completely agree with Zed about the Sam storyline. I just, as I said, if you're going to do a show like this, you cannot ignore this, which has been such a story in sports over the last several years and continues to be such a significant story, specifically with regard to football, specifically regard to the way that players in England are speaking out on these issues. I mean, during the pandemic, you had to have Marcus Rashford, who is an incredible human being and who has basically done more to feed the children of the country than the entire government has done, has spoken out and basically said, this is failure. Like, we are failing during the pandemic. This needs to be done. We need to extend these. He has put all of that system directly on trial and used his platform to do that. And then it comes down to the European Championships. And he's lauded for this, by the way. He's lauded for his behavior. He's praised. He misses a penalty kick in the European Championships and England loses, and he's racially abused on social media for the next several days. And this is, it's inescapable in modern sport. The fact that players are using their voices more and society is responding to it in positive and negative ways, because our society is not just one thing. It is both positive and negative. And that's part of what makes it so frustrating for so many people. To see this storyline play out the way it did in the episode felt very much of the time, in a way that maybe they don't realize it. Like you said, I think you so eloquently put, like, that's this show's thing. Like, whether they mean to do it or not, they're talking about sports psychology and the importance of that, just seeming to be at the same time when that's it's never been talked about more in our society. They're doing an episode now that feels a little more Law and Order, ripped from the headlines, like, because clearly this is an issue that didn't just start, but it feels very timely and very related to the things that are happening now. And so it was great to see it, and a little bit of a surprise to see it on Apple, for sure. But I just was so thrilled about that.
Let's do some free kicks, Antonio. Let's take this thing home. What have we not touched on in this episode that you want to make sure we hit before we close out?
How about a little banter? What do you think's going to happen?
We love banter.
What do you think's going to happen with this?
You and I are all about banter, by the way.
Yes, we don't use any pictures on this podcast. Yeah. It's very convenient for us.
We're just big time banterers.
We are. Is that like Grindr? How about that joke, huh? Was that a joke? Was it a joke?
I don't know. That was a lot.
There were two specific, because we're in free kicks now. There were two specific jokes. I guess. I don't think that was a joke. I think that was like, okay, you're telling on yourself a little bit, and I recognize that, and we're going to let that hang in the air, and maybe we'll deal with it later. No problem. I think the only other person that noticed it was Richard, who just sort of looked up at Colin like, excuse me? But that was a thing. And then so was Ted's joke about, I haven't seen a pass that soft since my high school drama teacher invited me to mow his lawn.
Oh, my God.
That was a little bit out of bounds, if I'm being honest.
The show has been spicy this season, I feel like.
I mean, they killed a dog immediately. Yes, yeah. The show has been spicy this season. And that was extremely spicy. So, but what about the banter app? Josh, it's pictureless. So clearly we're going to have a very Shakespearean mixed identity. Nobody knows who is. Like, they're going to have some kind of farce that happens here. Maybe it's more Commedia dell'arte, but who's going to match with who?
It's not going to be Higgins.
It's not going to be Rebecca and Ted. That's too obvious. Yes. Or maybe not.
I don't know. Here's prediction corner, because none of this matters and the predictions never add up, which is great. I'm fine with that. I'm not mad about it. No, I'm okay.
I think you need to talk to Dr. Fieldstone.
Yeah, we've got, at the end of this episode, she's using banter. Banter is out there as an element on the show. She's single, looking to mingle. Ted is single as well. We've got a Christmas episode coming up. They're both alone in certain regards, at least, here in London. Do they match and spend the holiday together?
I don't know. It just seems like that. I don't know. I mean, I feel like the show, if you're talking about like defying expectations or delivering in a way that we don't expect.
If we're defying expectations, then the move would be, because I'm blanking on the name of his girlfriend, but maybe it's Coach Beard.
And Rebecca?
Yeah.
Well, Nate said he downloaded the app. What about Nate and Rebecca? He did say he deleted it, so.
Oh my God, yes.
I mean, we did have the awkward moment in season one where Rebecca thought Sam was asking her out as well, so it could be a member of the team. I think we've got some candidates on here, depending on who Keely has pushed this app out to. Miss Bowen is a character who is clearly not a Mrs. Bowen. That was not her name. Her name was Miss Bowen. So she could be somebody that Ted could match up with. I think that seems to be something that we had kind of speculated about, what Miss Bowen's role could be on the show if she's in more episodes besides just being Phoebe's teacher. I don't know who Keely's pushing this app out to, but we know Rebecca is actively using it, and we know there aren't pictures on it. So we could have a scenario where Rebecca actually forms some feels for somebody, and it turns out to be somebody she did not expect. One thing that I will flag, and it's not a flag, but Ted, when he's talking about the app, said, wouldn't it be a thing if I got on there and I met my soulmate and it changed the whole course of my life? Like, he's almost stating something that it just seems like, okay, if you want to pull a Kevin Mahadeo and plant your snake in something, like, this may be a place where it would get planted. That was the most exceptional mixed metaphor I've ever heard someone try to attempt. That was a callback to the Everything is Super podcast. Yes. Here at Post Show Recaps. Yes. Where Kevin tried to plant Mike Bloom eating a snake, planting his flag. He mixed metaphors in a way that I'm still laughing about days later. If you wanted to do that, Ted does say, like, wouldn't it be a thing if I got on there and I met my soulmate and it changed the whole course of my life? Like, maybe that's the story of Ted's trip to England generally. Maybe not Ted on the app, but he metamused that. I don't know if there's a metamucil going on there, but that was definitely a metamusing. So I don't know. Beard and Jane sharing the iCloud. It does make it seem like she would. What did he say? I think she said she would grab his phone and destroy it with a pair of pliers or something, burn it with acid.
I mean, the
Beard and Jane stuff. I mean, if you want to track things that have gone on over multiple episodes, we had Beard sleeping in the office. They're sharing an iCloud. He's disappeared from his morning coffee with Ted because of something about Jane. Is this just a gag? Do you just want this to be a gag, or do you think the Beard and Jane stuff is going somewhere other than the gag?
You know, I think Brendan Hunt being one of the main writers on the show, he's, you know, an executive producer. He has a developed by credit as well. I hope that he and the other writers have the wherewithal to know that. I really think that there's a lot of room to expand on a ton of characters on the show, and I think that that's an excellent thing. But I do think that this sort of, like, international man of mystery quality to Beard is very fitting and should remain in place to a large degree. He's not really a character that I need, like, the real deep, like, you know, mechanic job on.
Definitely. And I think the more that you read about it, it does feel like they have kind of scrapped some plans, like some of the things that ended up on the writer's room floor, if you will, with regard to Beard, is there had been like this idea that some more of those international man of mystery elements would be there. So
it's, you know, like this
feels
is like
a vestige of that,
you know, like this is like, you know, like, I don't know, like this is like when Launchpad's not hanging out with Scrooge McDuck, like he's out and he's being like James Bond or whatever the hell they did back in like old school DuckTales. Like, don't do that with Coach Beard. You know, like, I think like every impulse to do like something that's like really like sort of almost like spin-offable about Coach Beard, like leave that to the arena of subtext. Let that fuel the performance. Let that fuel jokes. Give us like the perchance to dream here stuff. That's where Coach Beard works. Like, let's get into the psyche of Jamie Tart. Let's get into the psyche of Roy Kent. Let's see more Sam. Let's see more of these characters.
I don't need
that with Coach Beard. And I think that it is like very fragile ice if you try to skate across that. Like, I think it is delicate territory just because he is a character that it's so tempting to, I know that's a character where like it is very tempting to dig deeper in like a very funny way that's elaborated upon, where we now do suddenly find ourselves like almost in like way too self-referential comedy territory.
I think we are at good Beard right now. I don't think the Beard needs to be any longer or any shorter. Although it will be funny if one day Beard shows up clean shaven for some reason, or shaves his beard out of superstition, or is stripped of his power. There could be some Beard related stuff that I think could be funny to play.
That's
if you're talking
great.
About international man of mystery. Keep the why of that at bay, but have the how of it play out.
It's to your point earlier about like seeing the process of how did Ted Hulk out and become Led Tasso, and like what did he have to do to like psych himself into that position? I'm glad we don't know. The invisible spaces, that is like sublime stuff. Keep that, like the palace of imagination, right? You know, like, let us live there for some of these jokes. And I think that Beard is like the character in that regard for me that should be honoring that rule more than anybody else.
Very true. And I think the show's doing a good job of it so far. Speaking of things, though, that we I don't know if we want to. I mean, yeah, I mean, let's just talk about it. We talked about banter and we talked about beard. I want to get a little bit meta and get a little nuts and bolts for you here. We put the streak to bed here. They lost. They had beers afterwards. The streak is over. If we were taking the three episodes in one group, then the streak was pretty meaningless. It didn't hang around. It didn't define the team. It was over in the span of the premiere. So the question that I have for you then is, which came first? The idea of a streak of draws or the joke about streaks and draws and finding a way to put that into the show so they could make the joke? Do you think that this is a scenario where the whole reason the team had eight straight draws was because they wanted to make that joke?
No, I don't. But I think that it emerged quickly in the discussion of the winless
a
Richmond
streak of draws.
And that they are they have nothing but like what. So we want them to not be in a winning position. Should they have won one? No. What? How about like they didn't lose everything? It's Ted's least favorite thing. The unnatural, the tie. It's just been draw, draw, draw. Someone in the room shouts out a streak of draws.
Okay, and then there we go. Yes. Put that on the joke card as well.
Like, yes,
we'll
but don't that. Put that on. Like put that put that in the wash.
Okay, what about the character that we have? We've got a named character now. He had been named previously, but we're really mentioning his name aloud on the show and not just seeing it in the background of notes or whatever. What about this guy, Bumbercatch? Is that just a Cumberbatch joke?
Yeah, for sure. Like this is like a semi mean commentary from the writers on like British ridiculousness.
Yes, like Charles Edgar Cheeseerton
yeah,
III.
Exactly.
Like Bumbercatch.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. All right.
No way
okay.
that's not linked to Benedict Cumberbatch. Just zero chance.
Bumbercatch makes the list of Jamie's other sins. He called Colin a jaundiced worm in Colin's local newspaper, which is a great way to dig that knife in. It's not that you just called me that. You did that in like the place that was trying to big me up where I'm from. He also cupped a fart and put it in Richard's face. The three things, like really, really covers the whole range there. He's doing verbal insult work with the jaundiced worm. He's being completely gross and like mashing on Bumbercatch's mom, Janet, poor Janet, right in front of her dad. And then he's just doing the toilet humor and cupping a fart and putting it in Richard's face. Like this, Jamie Tart's sins really run the gamut. That's fantastic.
Yeah. And he got him relegated.
Yeah. And he got him relegated. His sins are so bad that John Moss, the Dutch guy who we don't see too much yet in the series, says, "I don't know you, but I don't like you."
Yeah. That was very funny. That was great when everyone's screaming at him.
Yes. Yeah. That was something I definitely wanted to hit. What about Sam's dad? Can we talk about this just for a moment? Dubai Air's been on their jerseys the whole time. I want to stand up for Sam's dad and say, when you're a player who's moved directly from Nigeria to the Premier League and you're young, you don't have a lot of luxury to speak out against the prime sponsor of the team. So I can understand why his dad did not put it on blast before. It does seem to be surprising that the Dubai Air of it all has not come up before. But I think if you look at it from that perspective, there is a huge push-pull for these athletes who have these platforms. I mean, there's a reason why so many athletes maybe don't feel comfortable speaking out. It takes a lot of courage because, I mean, look what happens with people like Colin Kaepernick. You lose your spot, you don't get it back.
Yeah.
Like, you don't get it back. They wanted to send Muhammad Ali to jail for crying out loud. Like,
yeah.
This is real shit. Like, there are real consequences for using your platforms, not the least of which are the death threats and all of that, which most players get just from playing poorly or from playing at all. But this is something much more specific. So I feel like Sam's dad, there's a difference between you don't have a choice of what jersey's on the sponsor and you don't have a choice of who you choose to put your face with and be the spokesperson of. And I think that's the bridge too far for Sam's dad. So I think it can be both worlds there for sure. But the family relationships are so prevalent throughout this series, especially with the fathers. But I think what we're seeing with Rebecca and Nora, especially in this episode, put the more maternal relationships on display as well. And just really fantastic. Roy's relationship with Phoebe, not for nothing, is also, there's a lot of the maternal in that. And I think just a really great stuff. That a lot of that is talked about on the podcast I mentioned. Speaking of which, if you don't know what Brendan Hunt sounds like outside of Coach Beard and where his thought process evolved from, it's fascinating. It's fascinating to listen to the way that guy thinks and speaks, because it just does not feel like Beard at all. And it's like, oh, that's the guy. He's an unusual guy. Like, okay, this is really good. So there's a lot of thinking that goes into the sensitivity of these characters and where it comes from. And that's talked about there. And so that really plays out in a lot of these parental relationships, and seeing that play out the way it did was great. I just love the small relationships in the show. I love that we saw Shannon in this episode. Shannon is the girl who meets with Ted around yes. his apartment.
Yes, yes. Yeah. That, you know, he's kicking the soccer ball with early on in season one. I feel like we've been like a little light on sort of like the local culture surrounding AFC Richmond this season, like a little bit of like everybody taking the photos of Ted and Jamie together. It was really good to see Shannon again, and to see that the show hadn't forgotten her. I really like that relationship between her and Ted. It's subtle, but it's really, really, really good.
It is. And I think it's important that Ted has these relationships that are about the football team. He has one with May as well, right? Where they're about the football team, but these are people that are in his corner. Because a lot of the people we saw in season one are calling him wanker and yelling at him. And if things do get ugly from a football perspective, we need people to be in his corner. And even though Shannon's in his corner, she's giving him shit about not winning. So I thought that was really fun, a fun scene, and a way to bring Shannon back into the story. We hadn't seen her this season yet, so that was really nice. Rebecca's not always on her game. She blows the thing with Higgins trying to make her look good. Right after she says you need to be 3 or 4 steps ahead and not reactive, you know, Higgins is basically saying like, hey, you really helped me, and she doesn't get it, and she's exposed. So that was, I think Higgins being quietly good, like good at his job, good at what he does, being the one who hired Dr. Fieldstone, being the one who's pushing a lot of these buttons. I think just Higgins being competent and good at his job is something I'm interested in seeing continue to evolve here. I don't just want to see Higgins the bumbling fool and Higgins the stammerer. I want to see Higgins being effective at what he does. And I think we're getting hints at that throughout these episodes. And I like seeing that continue to develop. I also like Higgins. I think that was She's a Rainbow playing on Higgins' ringtone there momentarily. I laughed at the Diamond Dogs adjourning with their little quiet howls. That was very funny. And not for nothing, Nate ended up being right about the fact that they needed to talk to Dr. Fieldstone about Jamie and not do the lead tasso shit. So I think it's funny to see all these characters just kind of being wrong in the moment. Not everybody's infallible on the show, and no one is infallible, really. And I think that's really effective. I will be interested to see the adversity that Dr. Fieldstone experiences. What is her character drama going to be as it plays out? She can't be the one who's always right and is always pushing the right buttons. I mean, she can be the Mr. Miyagi, but I think it's a more interesting character if we have something more to it than just that.
Well, we need to know more about her.
Yes.
Other than that, like, she
doesn't want to
eat sugar. And right. So she gets a gift basket of bottled water. You know, yes. there is more there. But, you know, I think right now there's more plot function than character there. And I agree that I want to see more character. But again, like, if we are treating these three episodes as the premiere, then I think they've given us enough for the quote unquote premiere. Like, I feel like she's defined enough right now for a very, very early foray into an important character, into a series regular, you know? I think we'll get there. It may take some time, especially as like other characters from the background are starting, from season one are starting to get more play time. Speaking of which, player of the match this week for me is just like a very easy Sam.
Yeah.
And like in any other episode, it would have been Nora. Yep. But I think Sam does take it.
I think that's right. Yep. I think that's right. Sam's the player of the match for me as well. And I think we should wrap it up here. I want to point out that the credits music, we talked about the beginning song being Hand in My Pocket by Alanis Morissette and Ted being sane but overwhelmed and lost but hopeful. The credits song in the post credits or the end credits was Kala, My Friend from the album Africa by Amenaz. And Amenaz is, according to the Wikipedia page, the band's name is an acronym, AMANAZ. Ask me about nice artists in Zambia. They are a Zambian group. This is from their only and yet acclaimed album, Africa. So a nice little bit of a hat tip there to the continent in a way that I think was fitting. And the vibe of the song, I think, really felt positive at the end of an uplifting episode, an episode that took us on a little bit of an emotional journey. This song was a very relaxing way to kind of see the episode out. So really liked having that. And I think just another fun way to take us away from a Ted Lasso episode. And next week, it's going to be Christmas. Oh, my God. I cannot wait.
I love Christmas. I'm really excited to see how does Ted Lasso do a holiday special. I'm excited. I'm excited because, again, like, this is territory that could be so sitcom tropey. So I'm really intrigued to see what does the show do differently around Christmas time. We're going to find out in no time at all. It'll be a little bit longer for the podcast, about a day later than usually you get these shows. So just a little patience and it shall be rewarded with, I'm sure, a really in-depth dissertation on all things holiday episode of Ted Lasso. I'm really pumped for it, Antonio.
In-depth dissertation. I feel like you're reading me, but I'll take it.
No, it's going to be great. It's going to be fantastic. You should take it. I mean it with all sincerity and love, and I am really, really digging how much we're digging into Ted Lasso this season. This has been really, really, really fun for me. I think it's a really rich show. I think there is, it's such an easy thing to say. There's so much there, but there really is. I think that this episode especially just had so much to it from like the bigger picture, like the really, the intensity and importance of a very relevant story to just the intricate character work that's going on, that the biggest like slapstick moment of the show landed to some with a thud. Like, I find that interesting, and I think I find it extra interesting in the context that we talked it through, that like it's landing with a thud in the context of the show too, the lead tasso stuff, like a lead balloon. So I love that. I think it's great. I think this season I'm really, really feeling it. I hope other people are feeling it as well. Ted Lasso at postshowrecaps.com. Hit up Antonio at AC Mazzaro. How many Z's? How many R's?
It's two Z's and one R. And I definitely want to thank everybody who has shared our podcast, retweeted our links, subscribed to our feed. Keep doing that. Keep pushing that out if you're not yet subscribed. And thank you so much for sharing our podcast on places. If you're on Reddit or if you're on other websites, sharing it around so that people that aren't currently in the Post Show Recaps universe can share this podcast. And if they're interested in it, get subscribed to the feed themselves and listen to it and become part of the community. So we're very thankful to everybody that's done that. And certainly thankful, Josh, to everybody who works on this show behind the scenes. The people who work in the editing, the people who work with the credits music, just everybody who has contributed to the show, I'm very thankful for.
100%. All right. Well, prepare your best carols. Or speaking of songs, are you going to be singing any carols on the podcast?
Oh, I mean, I want to see Last Christmas. I want to see Merry Christmas, Everyone.
Like, yeah.
I do not want to hear, oh, God, Wonderful Christmas Time by Paul McCartney. I'm a huge, huge Beatles fan, but that song. It's the worst.
It's annoying. It's definitely annoying.
I really hope we don't get that. That's my number one wish of this next episode. I don't even care about what happens to any of the characters. I just don't want to hear that song.
Yeah. Well, hopefully we don't get that one. There's so many other songs out there to choose from. That get your like one Christmas Carol trigger would be pretty lucky. Pretty direct hit.
We'll see. We shall see. It seems like it's very appropriate.
Nice to avoid. All right, we'll be back next time with our season 2 episode 4 recap. We appreciate you all. We'll be back soon. Take care. Bye-bye.
Cheers.